When you need to refuel between meetings or running errands, or you just want a healthy snack that squashes your hunger, Wonderful Pistachios, which come in a variety of flavors and sizes, by the way, are the perfect choice to fill you up and keep you going throughout the day. Wonderful Pistachios is also a good source of protein and a zero-guilt snack. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, guys, which gives you over 10% of your daily value. And with flavors like salt and pepper, sweet chili, and seasoned salt in the shelled variety, options like chili roasted, sea salt, and vinegar or jalapeno lime in the no-shell variety, you're sure to please your taste buds while snacking healthy. So check out wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more about how these little green wonders can power up your day. Quick math, beauties. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything just costs more. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, access from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move, so do the math and see how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Jillian. That's netsuite.com/Jillian. netsuite.com/Jillian. All right, who has not taken advantage of the week free trial of the fitness app yet? Check it out. It is a one-stop shop for all your fitness, nutrition, and wellness needs. Custom meal plans, personalized workout programs, meditations, sleep programs, community, support, and so much more. You can use it on any device, anywhere, any place, anytime. No equipment needed, or all the equipment in the world is in there. There's yoga, there's kickboxing, there's audio only workouts, there's HIIT training, weight loss programs, prenatal programs. Anything and everything you can think of is in the fitness app. And if you go to thefitnessapp.com/podcastdeal, you can get 25% off an annual subscription for $89.99 a year. So check it out and start your free trial today.
Welcome to Keeping It Real Conversations with Jillian Michaels.
Oh, good one. Another good one, Cindy. And today's guest is neuroscientist and nutritionist, Dr. Lisa Mosconi. Now, we had Dr. Mosconi on, God, Cindy, I don't know.
2 years ago, almost.
2 years ago. My goodness. And it was one of our most popular shows, I think, because we as women are, I'm going to go so far as to say, obsessed with how hormones impact us in every facet of our lives, at every stage in our lives, from puberty to pregnancy to perimenopause. And we're going to look at all of the ways that our hormones impact our brain health, in particular in that phase of perimenopause. If you are not there, if you are there now, if you are slightly post there, this show is going to help you optimize your cognitive function, keep your brain as healthy and focused and clear for years to come. It's never too late to catch this. It's never too late to take control of it. And there are different things we can do at any and every stage of our lives. And we're going to be talking to her in particular about the relationship between Alzheimer's and menopause, because it's fascinating the way that our estradiol levels, I'm going to let her explain this, impact the plaques in our brain and our cognitive function. There are things we can do. So I feel that very often women get discouraged and they feel overwhelmed and they think that there's no great answer. She's going to talk to us about HRT, hormone replacement therapy, who's a candidate, when you're a candidate, how to know if you're a candidate. She's going to talk to us about the right diet that we should all be consuming to ensure that we idealize our cognitive function and the health of our brain and keep our hormones humming and balanced for years to come. We're going to talk about lifestyle strategies that you're going to find relatively obvious, from stress management, hydration, exercise, and the list goes on. I love her. I'm so excited. She's one of my fave guests, Schminders.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy because we've been trying to get her on again for quite some time. She's been, I was reading an article in the New York Times Magazine quite a while back now. And I was like, yeah. Oh my God, I know her name. We've had her on the show. But she's been involved in so many studies and her work just keeps expanding. So I'm so glad we're able to get her. And it sort of piggybacks the conversation we have with Dr. Sonia Jensen a month or so ago. And I just think it's one of these topics that we don't hear enough about.
Do you know how many women I know that tell me I don't talk enough about it? I'm like, I've done multiple shows on it. You need to talk about it. I'm like, well, I can't really talk about, I'm not there yet to really, you're not qualified. It's kind of like you sort of got it. Like I can have the experts on, but I can't pontificate about this because I haven't done it yet. But they're like, oh, the brain fog, the hot flashes.
We don't think about it until we're there. And that's, yes. I think everybody's been saying that to you, wasn't there when we've talked about it. Now they're there. They want to hear about it.
It's going to impact each and every one of us who is a female, which is relatively a little over half the population.
Yeah.
And another one of my friends talked about just the psychology of it as well. Not just that this show is about, the physical components and what we can do. Of course, emotionally does play in, but she's like, you don't understand how it feels when you feel less sexy, you feel less this, less that. And, I don't know. We should probably also find somebody who can speak on that. But what I can tell you is that I've now spoken to multiple experts on the subject matter, and you can absolutely stay in great shape, maintain cognitive function, lessen symptoms of tiredness, brain fog, hot flashes. You absolutely can do a heck of a lot to impact all of this for the better, 100%. So we'll be right back with Dr. Lisa Moscone, and we will be touching on her book, The XX Brain, along with everything else I just mentioned. Okay, who's tired of fasting or cleanses that just leave you hungry and exhausted instead of rejuvenated and energized? Well, Prolon is the scientifically proven meal plan solution you've been waiting for. Prolon is a revolutionary plant-based nutrition program that nourishes the body while making the cells believe they're fasting. Researched and developed for decades at the University of Southern California Longevity Institute and backed by leading U.S. medical centers, Prolon helps promote healthy blood sugar, support cardiovascular health, and reduce abdominal fat. But Prolon isn't a diet. Prolon is science based on Nobel Prize-winning discoveries in medicine. And this all starts with Prolon's 5-day program, snacks, soups, and beverages, all designed to keep your body in a fasting state. It's unlike anything you've ever experienced. I did it for 5 days because I've had the absolute hardest time with straight fasts for even 24 hours, and it was a game changer for me. So right now, Prolon is offering Keeping It Real Conversations with Jillian Michaels listeners 10% off their 5-day nutrition program. Just go to prolonlife.com/Jillian. That's prolonlife.com/Jillian for this special offer. That's prolonlife.com/Jillian. All right, guys, we are back with one of my all-time favorite guests, Dr. Lisa Moscone. And you guys, as I mentioned, may remember our segment on her book, The XX Brain, which we're going to jump into as well in the next couple of segments. But first, Doc, you have been busy. What has been going on with you? Tell us all what's been going on.
Yeah, it's been a lot. So as you know, I launched the Women's Brain Initiative at Weill Cornell Medicine a couple of years ago, and I just took on the role of director of the Alzheimer's Prevention Program the Wild Connect Medicine / New York Presbyterian.
Oh,
and
gosh.
The program is everything Alzheimer's prevention. So the Women's Brain Initiative is part of it, but I'm now also in charge of the Alzheimer's Prevention Clinic, the Weill Cornell Presbyterian, and a soon to be developed clinical trial unit. So I'm bringing in clinical trials that are actually, I'm super excited about this. We're starting a clinical trial that is very specifically focused on women's brains during menopause, and is sponsored by the NIH. So I'm really happy about that.
Well, that was actually my next question. So for anybody that missed our first show, which I will link to in the show notes, guys, can you explain to people how menopause and Alzheimer's are linked? Because that's not common knowledge.
No,
for you it is. I mean, you're a neuroscientist, so for you it is, but for the rest of us, can you explain that connection?
Yeah, also it's not really known among neuroscientists as well. I think this is considered still quite a niche topic in a way, even though all women have brains, and women are half of the population, and menopause impacts the brain. We don't talk about it. I think that menopause has really been missing in neuroscience for centuries. We're just bringing it back, and I think that's wonderful. So to answer your question, there is a link. There seems to be a link between menopause and Alzheimer's disease, in that menopause, as all women know, is accompanied by the decline in estrogen levels. So this right. super important hormone that we say it's estrogen is actually estradiol, that has a lot of different functions and is not only involved in reproduction, it's also really super important for brain function. And I think we just don't talk about this enough, that estrogen is the master regulator of women's brains. And it's involved in everything from growing brain cells to having energy. So what happens during menopause, when the ovaries stop making the estradiol or make a lot less, is that brain energy also changes. The way that the brain responds to aging changes. The way that the brain is able to make neurotransmitter changes. The way that the brain is able to overcome inflammation is changing, not in the best possible way. Everything kind of slows down a little bit. So for women with a predisposition to Alzheimer's disease, it looks like these changes also enable the formation of Alzheimer's plaques in women's brains.
Oh, I understand. So that's the mechanism, is that without the estradiol, it can lead to the formation of more plaque because in your brain that causes Alzheimer's because your brain is not functioning the way it used to without that hormone at that level.
Because estrogen or estradiol is neuroprotective. It's a hormone that overall protects the brain from harm. So when you lose the kind of superpower of estradiol, then if you have a predisposition to something like Alzheimer's disease, that's when the risk turns into a visible medical concern, which we find using brain scans. So we see the plaques, the Alzheimer's plaques, that really kind of pop up in women's brains during perimenopause, which is in our 40s and 50s. So that's a completely different way to think about brain aging and Alzheimer's disease, because most people think of Alzheimer's as a disease of old age.
Yes. Absolutely. 80. Yeah.
Yes.
Dementia. Yeah. 80. Yeah.
80 is enough.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Right.
Okay. So I know you told me this before, but this quite honestly was at least a year ago.
Or longer.
I feel like you told me that more women are affected by Alzheimer's than men. Am I remembering this correctly?
You are. So the reason that we're looking into menopause, look, as a brain scientist, the last thing I was thinking to do was to look into menopause. It was really the last thing on my mind. But it's really important because we really got to menopause by looking at Alzheimer's disease. So the thing is, Alzheimer's disease affects more women than men. Almost 2/3 of all Alzheimer's patients are women, which means
that
it's huge. It's like for every man suffering, from Alzheimer's disease, there are two women. And we never talk about Alzheimer's disease or brain health as something that women should be concerned about. And I think we need to change this conversation, because women in their, like a woman in her 60s is almost twice as likely to develop Alzheimer's disease in the rest of her lifetime as she is to develop breast cancer. But breast cancer is very clearly identified as a women's health issue. And no, most women don't know that Alzheimer's disease is also something that we should really pay attention to and try to avoid, because it's so prevalent among women.
Okay, Doc, I have a question.
That was shocking. That thing about it, I just dropped it there, but then I realized, wait a minute, that is actually upsetting probably, but it's true.
No, knowledge is power. Knowledge is power, Doc. That's why we have you on. So then here would be my first thought though, right? It's like, well, if estradiol protects my brain, men don't have a lot of estradiol.
Correct.
So how come they don't have Alzheimer's from go? What do they have that we don't have?
Because
I want that then if I run out of estradiol. Is that what's going on there then? I don't understand that.
I want to do what they're doing.
Yeah. Because he doesn't have estradiol now, that guy on the street over there. So what's he got then, if it's not estradiol?
He's got testosterone. So women make more estradiol, more estrogen than testosterone, and men make more testosterone than estrogen.
And that's what's protecting their brain?
Yes, testosterone is also as protective as estrogen is. So women's brains are wired to run on estrogen.
Okay.
And men's brains are wired to run on testosterone more. You know, it's more prevalent, testosterone in men. And both these hormones have the same kind of powers in the brain. They're just really protective, and they're involved in all these different functionalities. What is important for women is that estrogen and testosterone differ in their longevity, because we as women, we lose the power of estrogens in midlife during menopause, whereas men don't go through andropause, which is the male equivalent to menopause, which nobody ever talks about.
No.
Until much later in life, like in their 70s and 80s.
Oh my gosh. Okay. That makes perfect sense.
Exactly. And another
that makes perfect sense.
Another thing that's really important is that women's brains go through cycles or phases that I call the three P's. There's puberty, pregnancy, and perimenopause. And that each one of these turning points, our hormones change dramatically and their brains change as well. Whereas testosterone kind of stays flat or declines just a little bit over time, but it's pretty much linear, which makes men's brains age in a very different way.
Okay. Can I start with puberty?
Yeah.
What? Because I am dealing with it. Not me. It's in my household. It's going on in my household. Oh my God. I mean, the child, I'm like, who are you? What? So we begin now. Puberty. I'm assuming massive amounts of estradiol then, yes?
Yeah.
And where's progesterone in this mix, by the way? Because I don't understand how that plays into this. And I only want to understand because I want you to then tell us what we can do about this.
But
so puberty, what's going on there? And where's progesterone in this whole game cycle?
So starting with puberty, are we talking girls, boys?
Girls. I'm sorry. Girls. Now I'm done with men. I don't care about them anymore. They can go to 80. Forget it. Screw them. This is about us. I just wanted to see if I could steal something from them that would work better for me. Now that I know that's impossible. We're back onto the girls. I apologize.
Back on the girls. No, it's really important. Well, so my daughter is six, so I'm preparing spiritually and then trying to understand puberty as best I can. You never know when it hits. You know, it could be 11, could be 12, you don't know. So what happens at puberty is that we know that the body is changing, right? Our secondary sexual characteristics are emerging. Okay. And we know that girls start menstruating and having a cycle. What I think is not as clear is that the brain also follows the menstrual cycle.
Okay.
So there's a very strong connection between the brain and the ovaries that really kind of blossoms with puberty, and it gets a lot stronger with puberty. And as you know, during the menstrual cycle, all these different hormones change.
Right. It's like there's more progesterone at the end or something of it. And
yes.
And then if that's off, more PMS. And yes. But I don't fully follow it completely.
So the menstrual cycle is broadly divided in two separate phases. There's the follicular phase, the start, right, the first day of menstruation, when estradiol levels are really, really low. Pretty much everything is kind of low. Okay. Within 10 days, estradiol peaks as we approach ovulation. And that also makes other hormones like FSH, the follicle stimulating
hormone. Got it.
Yes. Okay, then we have then we have ovulation. And then the second phase of the cycle begins when estradiol is lower, although there's a second peak, but smaller a little bit later. Progesterone is much higher, and LH, the luteinizing hormone, is also higher.
Got it.
And testosterone also kind of peaks right before ovulation, but broadly remains stable throughout the menstrual cycle in women. So these constant fluctuations in hormonal levels also impact the brain. And one thing that I find beautiful, being a neuroscientist, is that that's how you really notice how protective and how nurturing estradiol is. Because as it peaks during the first phase of the cycle, you can literally see neurons grow. Neurons, wow, and brain cells, yeah, they have like, they look like trees with a lot of branches, and the branches are called dendrites, and they literally grow during when estrogen peaks. And the growth.
So would that be like a time to do most of your like deep thinking and learning? Because you could hold more?
You actually, there are studies showing that verbal memory is more active during that specific phase of the cycle, that women are more energized, you're usually in a better mood because of all these effects. And there's this science to it.
No, I get it. I'm with you. I've witnessed it. Fair. I got it.
And whereas during the second phase, as the estradiol withdraws and the progesterone comes along, you feel more sleepy, because progesterone is a very sleep-friendly hormone.
Okay.
But you kind of slow down, and these little branches actually withdraw. So you do feel more tired. Yeah. These are microscopic changes, just to be clear. It's not like our brains turn into sponges or anything. But there are changes nonetheless that I think are important to appreciate and really follow, in a way. Just be more gentle with yourself during that time, if you do feel the effect mentally as well. You know, PMS is rough.
Oh.
Brain fog is unpleasant, and all these hormones that are changing and surging and you know, finding a baseline.
Yes.
They need time. Yeah. And that's why you get, you know, you can't fall asleep at night, but then you sleep late in the morning, or you feel irritable or cranky. As a teenager.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Okay. Okay. No. I, wow. Yeah. I got you. So
you know, and that's just preparing your body to become an adult and potentially, you know, be a mother if you're thinking reproductive system. But I think I think puberty is, it's some kind of rocky transition towards, yeah, adulthood, and then it stops. At some point, everything finds a baseline, and that's your personal baseline, and then you're ready to be a person.
I'm like, oh man, it started so early too for my kid. I feel so bad for her, because she's just she started at 9, ooh, and at 11, like, I know she's very, I know, and at 11 she like walked out of a hair salon yesterday, and my fiance had not seen what she was wearing when she left the house, and she had a mask on and did not. She's like, oh my God, babe, I thought a 20-year-old walked out, because she's taller than me. She's, oh, wow, got size 9 feet. She's full. It's insane. And it's like, you're still dealing with an 11-year-old who looks like it's nuts, you know, and you know, she's got the brain of an 11-year-old. It does not look like an 11-year-old. It's wild. So, okay, I got it. I'm following you there. Now, The majority of women that ask me questions about menopause,
mm-hmm,
they're always about, I'm tired. I can't lose the weight. I can't this, I can't that, you know, and now we're talking about Alzheimer's. And I feel like this is so, such a bleak picture of this inevitable slow descent into decrepitude. And I, you know, and you wrote a whole book about what to do. And you're running a whole thing about what to do. Yes. So I want to stop painting such a dire picture now. And I'm going to take a quick break. And when we come back, Doc, tell us what we can do. Yes. So guys, we will be right back with neuroscientist, Dr. Lisa Mosconi.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Soup or salad? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From your online start to your first million orders, Shopify's there to help you grow. No matter what your product is, they can help you sell it everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, Shopify can help you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average than other leading commerce platforms. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/Jillian, all lowercase. Just go to shopify.com/Jillian now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/Jillian.
All right. Everyone knows by now how much I love Skims underwear because I mentioned them a ton and I've been wearing them forever. I mean, I guess specifically a year and change. That's not forever in my life. I can stick with something for longer than 30 days. It's forever. So this is big for me. And let me tell you, they are worth the hype, from the support they give to their amazing shape. And best of all, they're super comfortable. Whether it's the weightless scoop bra, the fits everybody plunge bra, the fits everybody t-shirt bra, I just get them in sand. You don't see them under anything at all. They're awesome. They're comfortable. I don't even realize I'm wearing them. They go with everything. So shop Skims bras at skims.com now, available in 62 sizes from 38 to 46H. And if you haven't yet, be sure to let them know I sent you. So after you place your order, select podcast in the survey and select my show in the drop-down menu that follows.
Quick math, beauties. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything just costs more. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform. And one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, access from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move, so do the math and see how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Jillian. That's netsuite.com/Jillian. netsuite.com/Jillian.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
All right, guys, we are back with one of my all-time favorite guests, neuroscientist Dr. Lisa Mosconi. We're jumping back into menopause, and you promised me good news, Doc.
Yes.
There's got to be. Come on now. Where's my silver lining here? What can I do about it? What's the good news?
So I do account with good news.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
But that's why we do it, right? I was tired of hearing that menopause is such a catastrophe. And the point is, when you look at cognitive performance, for the vast majority of women, it's completely unaffected. So you do feel tired, you feel fatigued, you do have these memory lapses of the brain fog. But when we test cognitive performance, like formally and officially, the vast majority of women are fine. In fact, women outperform men on cognitive testing before, during, and after the transition.
Wow, really? All right, that's great news.
That's great news, number one.
Yes, doc. Yes, there we go. Okay, I'm with you. Good, keep going.
But so that was always counterintuitive to me, because when I do the brain scans, we do find these changes in brain energy levels. We find that we lose some neurons in the brain. And I thought, well, how is cognitive performance preserved? To me, it speaks to compensation. There's something that's happening that allows these brains to keep functioning, even though the estrogen isn't there and women don't feel so good, right? The same way that happens in pregnancy. When you're pregnant, sometimes you have the brain fog. You even have the hot flashes in pregnancy. So we did this big study that took 6 years of my life.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a commitment, I tell you. Yeah. Lots of funds, lots of work. And we showed, by doing longitudinal evaluations and enrolling and studying more and more women, that yes, you do have a change during the transition to menopause that correlates with the brain fog and the feeling that you don't feel so good. And you see that brain energy levels really plummet a bit during perimenopause. But then if you follow women long enough, you do find it is stabilized, it kind of plateaus. And for some women, actually, there's a rebound after menopause, like 5 or more years after menopause, which is also when the symptoms of menopause tend to go away for most women. The hot flashes stop, insomnia gets better, the mood usually goes back to a good mood. So there really seems to be, like puberty that we were just saying, there's a rough transition, but then the brain finds a new normal, adjusts, adapts, and carries on. So I think we should really focus on our adapting abilities of our brains that are so under-celebrated and understudied. Nobody looks at that. But our brains have the ability to find a new normal and adjust to menopause. And we're not looking into what factors really support this brain recovery.
Okay, so I have so many questions. All right, I cut you off. Finish that thought, Doc. I'm sorry.
No, I just wanted to say, for some women, that does not happen. And we find it when the brain plaques actually show up, or some women develop anxiety and depression, and menopause can trigger neurological disorders. But that's not universal. That's not for all women. Most women have a bit of a hard time, but then there are no long-term side effects. And I really want to stress this fact, that for most women, menopause is a normal, I mean, for all women, menopause is a normal phase of life. And I think that we really support our brains during this transition. We can also minimize the risks of neurological disorders, psychiatric issues, or psychological changes to show up.
Okay. I wrote all my notes. I'm gonna hit you, Doc. All right. So going off piece a bit here, I'm thinking breast cancer, too much estrogen. Can you explain? Yeah. There's different kinds of estrogen. What's too much? What's not enough? Xenoestrogen? Like, because people think, oh, it's too much estrogen, I'm gonna get breast cancer. But then it's like, oh, you're not making enough estrogen, now you have brain fog and you could get Alzheimer's. Like, what is the right balance of these different kinds of estrogen? Am I on Mars? Like, you know what I mean? Is it not totally unrelated?
I think they're different mechanisms.
Okay.
Yes, there are some kinds, there are some types of cancer that are estrogen receptor positive cancers. There are some that are progesterone receptor positive cancers. And in that case, having too much estrogen is a problem. It could activate the predisposition to cancer. The majority of women works under different physiological conditions where estrogen is actually nurturing for the body and the brain. So usually people at risk for breast cancer with a history of breast cancer are studied or are assessed differently.
I see.
We always screen for, you know, cancer factors or whether or not somebody has a personal history of cancer or a family history of cancer, which is probably, I would say, the strongest predictor of breast cancer. And obviously therapeutic options differ. So women without.
Right. That was my next question. And I remember you did tell me this, but again, it was a while ago. And I feel like you told me that for some people, hormone replacement's a good idea. And for other people, it's not a good idea.
Yes.
So, and this is based on these kinds of screenings?
Yes, for sure. So some people would give estrogen replacement therapy also to breast cancer survivors. I'm not so sure about that. And it's a conversation to have with an oncologist and a women's health specialist. So that is a very specific situation.
Okay.
For women who do not have a predisposition to breast cancer, I would say hormone replacement therapy really has to be individualized. There are many, many possible risks that come with taking hormones. In some cases, it's actually indicated. So it's really case by case. Like, I'll give you an example of when it is indicated and an example of when it's not indicated. It comes up a lot. So what the research shows so far, and it's in progress, of course, we need more research, more data, but what the research so far has shown is that if you start taking hormones more than 6 years after your final menstrual period or after being in menopause, that is not helpful to protect against Alzheimer's disease and does not improve memory or cognitive function.
Okay.
This is what clinical trials have shown so far. The opposite example is for women who have an oophorectomy before menopause. Oophorectomy is the surgical removal of the ovaries It causes menopause. So if you're 30 and you have your ovaries removed, you go through menopause at 30.
Yep.
In that case, estrogen replacement is actually recommended for a variety of reasons, including protecting against heart disease, osteoporosis, and there's also some evidence that it might help with cognitive health. We need more research, we need more work, but it really depends. You need to take a lot of factors into account, like a woman's age, where she is on the menopausal map, family history of variety of disorders, not just breast cancer, the overall health of the body of the brain. What I want to do is to really look at the brain, right? Because so many women come to us and say, should I take estrogens to prevent Alzheimer's disease? And
yeah.
I only wish it was as easy to say, yeah, but we can't do it. So
yeah.
This is the clinical trial that we're starting now. We're looking at whether a very specific estrogenic formulation that does not increase the risk of breast cancer might be protective for the brain if started before menopause.
Before menopause?
Before.
So like somebody like me would be the candidate for that because I'm not in menopause yet, but I'm 47. So I would be the one that should be doing that.
Yes. I don't think you should. If you want, they have a clinical.
Oh, wait, hold on. Doc, do I need to be on estrogen? Wow. Okay. So how long until you, for selfish reasons, how long until you have this information? Because like before.
5 years. The clinical
trial
is 5 years.
All right. Okay. I'll make it 5 years. I'm going to make it 5 years.
Can't get a brain scan. But you know, it's really, I think what I think people need scientists in the women's health space, brain scientists, because we know from the brain sciences that estrogen can have either a good effect or a bad effect, depending on the physiology. So if you, for example, if you already have Alzheimer's plaques in your brain and you put estrogen, you introduce estrogen, that actually makes them worse.
Oh, God.
Wow. So I think we should be screening.
I understand.
Before, you know, so this is what we're trying to do, is to provide evidence that screening is helpful.
I totally understand now. So
it's
fascinating. And so in theory, it's supposed to protect you, but then if you already have it.
If you have if you have issues already, it could make it worse. Like, for example, vascular issues. And you don't know that you have them unless you check. And yes, it's not routine. We're not doing this routinely. I think ultimately what I would love to do is to provide better care for women. Like, we really want to change women's health in a way that is more brain health as well. So the brain health becomes really an integral part of women's health. And I think that we really need to be more multidisciplinary in the approach. Like, yes, you're testing HRT, but I want to test your system as you take the HRT, right?
I see.
I think we need to invest more resources and more intellectual power in these trials from all different disciplines, because everybody contributes a different point of view. Maybe they know something different that comes from a different field, and the brain hasn't been included in women's health conversations, let me tell you.
Of course. You know, I was going to ask you about the transition phase and what we can do to optimize, make it more manageable. But you're telling me it's so individualized.
Yes.
Is the thing to do, get a brain scan to know how to proceed?
I'll tell you as soon as I know for sure. In my opinion, it's really helpful for us, but I can't tell you that people should get brain scans. Also, they wouldn't be reimbursed at this point. So,
of course.
It's insurance.
I get it. But is there a universal tip? Like, take primrose oil, or ridiculous, but I'm saying is there anything that's unilateral that you could say about this phase?
Yeah, workout. I know it sounds a little like easier.
It doesn't. I mean, look who you're talking to. I get it.
Yeah, but if there's one thing that everybody agrees on, brain scientists, women's health specialists, menopause specialists, OBGYNs, is that exercise really works like a charm for the symptoms of menopause. It really is protective of the brain, it's protective of your hormones. And women who are physically active in midlife, you're doing fantastic. They have a 30% lower risk of dementia later in life as compared to women who are broadly sedentary in midlife. Now, 30%, if that was a drug, everybody would take it.
Incredible. Yeah. You're right.
Yeah.
Yep.
And the same thing for hot flashes. Like, people who don't exercise and have hot flashes during menopause, which is one of the most concerning symptoms, right? It's hot flashes and brain fog, usually. When they start exercising like consistently, the hot flashes go down, the brain fog clears up. So there really seems to be a huge positive effect of a consistent exercise routine. And then I know that it's case by, you know, you're super physically active. I have to sit all day. So as soon as
I do sit, because I, like, for example, like I'll be sitting for probably like, because podcasts press throughout the day. So I do it, but I will work out as well. So any little bit of activity matters, but a consistent exercise regimen is, I always say, it's one of the top forms of preventative medicine, because doctors like you tell me this stuff all the time.
And look, everybody agrees on that. I don't know anyone who would say there's no value to exercise. And other things are stress reduction. Stress is really important. And we don't talk about the effects of stress on the brain as much, or on your hormones. Like, we know stress is bad for the heart, but I think we don't really appreciate that stress really has a negative effect on the brain. Chronic stress, not acute. So chronic stress sinks your hormones, especially as a woman. You know, as we're going through menopause, we're losing the estradiol already. But another way to lose it is to be really stressed. That's because the sex, I know, yay, great news. That's because the sex work imbalance with stress hormones.
Oh God.
Yeah. So if your stress hormones, like if your cortisol goes up, your production of estradiol goes down.
Goes down.
But if you're able to reduce the stress and bring the cortisol down, then the production of estradiol can resume. So they really go hand in hand, and you know, reducing stress doesn't just save your day, it saves your brain.
Yeah. Like,
but it's true. I think we take it for granted. I think as a society, we think of wellness and well-being as a skill, something that you have to grow and cultivate. But we're not really being given the tools to cultivate our mental health, I find. Like, we have toothbrushes to brush our teeth. We have soap to wash our hair. We have all these tools that we come up with that we learn to use, and we use them daily.
Yes.
But then there's no clear tools to promote mental health. And I would argue that mental health is just as important as body hygiene.
I get it. Yeah, I understand completely.
So we need to reduce stress. We need to find ways. And exercise is a great way, but then there are other tools as well. Like meditation is a great one. Trying to sleep at night would be also very helpful.
I prioritize the heck out of I always have. I look at, as I understand how dramatically it impacts your hormone balance from cortisol, hunger hormones, HGH production. I am religious about trying to get at least 7 hours, preferably 8. I will skip things. I will not work out that day. Instead, and opt for an extra sleep if I need to. Because I understand how significant that is as well.
Yes.
Can I ask you, I noticed something. This is such a loaded question for so many women. When I am drinking more, my PMS is way worse. Does alcohol, is it me? Like, boobs hurt more, retain more water, shittier mood, always know I'm about to get my period. And when I exercise a little more, I don't drink. If I'm like, oh, I'm trying to drop weight for something and I'll cut out alcohol that month, or and I lose a couple of pounds, but like, I don't even realize I'm getting my period. And I wonder, do you know, am I, you know, fantasizing this? Is there a connection there?
Yeah. Sure. Hormonal. So the way that the body responds to alcohol is influenced by hormonal levels.
So, oh, wow.
Yeah. So,
okay.
So if you drink alcohol during the first phase of the cycle, when your estrogen is high, the alcohol will work faster for you. You'll feel the effects a little bit faster. You'll be more satisfied and have fewer side effects. During the second phase of the cycle, when your progesterone is higher and your estrogen is lower, you'll need 3 times the amount of alcohol to feel the effects. So you might end up drinking more without realizing it.
You literally just blew, because there are times I have one glass of wine, I'm like, why am I drunk?
Yeah.
And then there are times I can have two and I feel nothing. Nothing.
Exactly.
That's incredible. Okay.
And one thing to consider is that alcohol is dehydrating, right? Yeah. So that's the way that it was invented, to dehydrate things. So it has an effect in the body as well. And it could easily make the brain fog worse, or some neurological symptoms like dizziness or fatigue, because the brain is the one organ that is really the most sensitive organ to dehydration. So even a very mild water loss of 2%, 2 to 4% is enough for some women, or some people, also men, to really experience neurological symptoms, including the brain fog and fatigue and dizziness and confusion.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So obviously, and drink a lot of water then as well would help tremendously.
Yeah. So, you know, societies and cultures, they really, like the Mediterranean cultures that drink red wine all the time, don't ever drink alcohol on an empty stomach. And we always have a glass of water next to it. The same for coffee. If you go to a fancy cafe in Italy, for example, and you order an espresso, they bring you the espresso and the glass of water.
Yes. Diet. Is there a diet for this? Is there a one-size-fits-all approach to the diet to this? I mean, are there certain foods do, don't do? Or like, omega-3s? Mm. Is that a thing here or not really?
For menopause and for the brain.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah.
So there isn't a lot of research on this topic, but we kind of know what not to do. So I'll start with that.
Okay.
Processed food. Yeah. Is an issue. Yes. Everybody knows.
Across
that,
the board. Right? I see. Yeah.
So ultra or highly processed food is a definite no. It's associated with all sorts of issues, including early menopause for women who have no reason to go through early menopause. So high consumption of processed foods.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And smoking is the number one cause of early menopause in women because smoke is an ovarian toxin. So that's a great reason to not smoke tobacco or anything. So many people still do. And
it's crazy. I know. It's mind boggling, but yeah. Sorry, Doc, go ahead.
One more reason to not smoke, especially as a woman, is that it's really bad for your ovaries as well as the rest of you, but for the diet. So processed food has got to go. Things that seem to be supportive of menopause and are associated foods, not things that are associated with a later onset of menopause are legumes and fish.
Of course. Omega-3s, right?
Omega-3s and complex carbohydrates. So fiber.
Fiber, of course.
So fiber has a harmonizing effect on hormone levels because it has a good impact on a molecule that's called the sex hormone binding globulin, which is what determines the amount of free hormones as compared to bound hormones. So it regulates hormonal levels a little bit. It's not magic, but it has a positive effect.
It helps. This is why I absolutely loathe diets that talk about cutting. It's so obscene. Because when you get into these diets that cut out whole entire macronutrients,
yes,
then you have people running around like a loaf of bacon and an apple is evil. Yeah. It's just nuts.
I would say there's really very little to no research showing that eating more animal foods than necessary is good for you. There's a ton of research showing that the Mediterranean diet or that kind of the Mediterranean style.
Yes.
Diet has really beneficial effects for women's health, right? So it's got women on a Mediterranean diet, if you compare them with women on a Western style diet, they have a 25% lower risk of heart disease and stroke. They have a 50% lower risk of breast cancer. They experience a 25% reduction in hot flashes as they start the diet. They have a 30% or higher or lower risk of depression, and they also have a lower risk of dementia. And we have done brain scans to kind of try and understand the effects of the diet on the brain. And if you take a group of women, midlife women, who stick to a Mediterranean style diet,
yes,
and those who are more Western style diet, and you look at their brains, they really change quite differently in that the brains of women who follow a more Mediterranean style diet, they literally look like 5 years younger than the brains of the other group. Now, we have done proper statistics and we can show brain scans and the way they change and not change. But there is an effect. And it's just common sense in a way, right? You really want to eat fruits and vegetables,
right?
I think. And then I personally enjoy whole grains and legumes because I'm Italian, so I do that. But there's really, I don't see that many side effects to that unless you have an allergy or an intolerance. And then some fish here and there, if somebody likes it, extra virgin olive oil, flax oil, like good unrefined oils.
Right.
And everything else in moderation as a treat. That's the Mediterranean style. Plant-centric, but very diverse, very diversified. Like when I make a salad, I want to have like 10 different greens and veggies in my salad. And you get all the benefits of all the nutrients. And you know, that's how the centenarians eat.
Yep.
coming
from a nutritionist and a neuroscientist, guys.
You know what's really interesting? I went to a dinner the other day and there were some brain scientists, and then there was everybody else. And then the host is like, who is a vegetarian here? All the brain scientists with their hands up and nobody else.
Really?
All the actual brain scientists who study nutrition and whatnot. Everybody.
No animal protein whatsoever? None?
Little fish here and there.
Little bit of fish. Right. Okay. So they're still getting the omega-3.
Yeah, vegetarian is not vegan, though.
Right. So maybe some pasture-raised eggs.
I think
they're doing some maybe fermented dairy and some wild-caught fish.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit
even
of fish.
The doctor, you know, even the doctor who came up with fasting, with intermittent fasting and keto diets, Dr. Mattson at the NIH, he doesn't eat meat that much. I mean, when he gives interviews, he says very clearly he eats oatmeal, plenty, maybe some fish and some yogurt, but he never mentioned meat, even though
Oatmeal's not keto.
I don't know. Or maybe he does. Maybe he eats meat. I don't know.
No, I understand keto personally. I mean, we've gone off topic a bit for like, you have a severe insulin resistance issue and we need to dramatically resensitize you to insulin quickly. 30 days under a doctor's supervision, done correctly, no processed meats, predominantly plant-based. Like I get that.
Mm-hmm.
Most people are not doing that, and they're doing it for God knows how long, and they're not under the supervision of somebody who actually knows what that diet's supposed to look like.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, then we talk to someone like you who's like, hey, look, here's what the research says, and there's no one more qualified than you. And if there is someone as qualified as you, I've interviewed them and they say the same thing. Whether it's Dr. William Lee or Dr. Uma Naidu, and it's like one's looking at mood and nutrition. Oh, she's fantastic. I had her on like several months ago. Fantastic. And Dr. Lee, and they're all different modalities of medicine, right? Subspecialties.
Okay. Yeah.
And
yeah.
You guys all come back with similar advice. Exercise. Yeah. Don't eat processed foods. This is this is what your diet should look like. The through line is everything that you teach us about, that you're talking about. And I just, I don't know, Doc, you're fantastic. And I want everybody to get the book. We've talked about the book, but that was quite some time ago. It's one of the most informative books that I think I've read ever. And in particular, top three with Dr. Lee and Dr. Naidu in the last decade. And it really does empower you to know what to do to take the best care of your health, in particular, your brain. It's called The XX Brain by Dr. Lisa Moscone. And Doc, I know you're so busy. I mean, I doubt you're running out. Where can we get more other than the book?
Well, I'm working on a new book. It's about menopause. It's really specifically about menopause and preparing for it. And
you better hurry, because now I'm going to start. You better hustle, because I got 5 years, maybe a little more. You better start. You better move on that, Doc. I need it.
We're trying. And, you know, if anybody's interested in participating in the research, we're enrolling. We're in New York. We just need one day of people's time. And
how do they sign up? Where do they need to go?
Oh, I wish I had a good website to send you to. But if somebody Googles Weill Cornell Women's Brain Initiative, or me, Lisa Moscone Women's Brain Initiative is the first thing that comes up. And there's a contact. There's an email right there.
Otherwise,
they can email me on Instagram or DM me on Instagram. And I'm kind of good at forwarding.
Okay. Perfect. Doc, thank you so much. You're fantastic and as amazing as always. I cannot wait for the new book. And I think I might need to sign up for your study. I need you to.
Yes.
I'm like right there. I can't have you come out after the fact with this information. So I'm going to have to DM you a little bit later, because I think I need to be one of your people for this.
I would love that. Yeah. We're always here. And if you would like a brain scan, that would be wonderful.
Thank you so much for everything. If you guys want to be a part of the study, get behind me in line.
All right, guys, we want you to subscribe to the podcast so you can stay up to date with our life-changing and life-saving information. So on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you're listening, click that subscribe button.